This is WHFR Dearborn, and now for the next hour, another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is December the 5th, 2008. My name is Jay Koronik. Happy to have you with us to find out what's going on locally and what myself and my co-host today, Susan Morrell, has to think about it. How are you, Susan?
Hi, Jay. It's pretty nippy out there.
Absolutely. It's winter in Michigan.
Yes, it is. And it's going to be in the 20s. I think it's going to be around 26 degrees today. And tonight it's going down to about 19 degrees.
Wow.
That's nippy.
Yeah. It's a good thing I had my new furnace just put in this week. So it was really nippy last week in my house. Let me tell you, I get these electric heaters out. And we made it through, my two cats and I. That's one way to get a cat to sit on your lap is to have the house approach 50 degrees. In any event, of course, at the top of the news, which is a local issue but also also national an issue, if not an international issue too, is the fate of the auto companies. And I won't bemoan this one way or the other because it's in all the news media, but you may not have heard the latest two things from the New York Times because it's just their edition this morning. The first is, again, it's on their front page of the New York Times this morning. Auto executives face a hard sell on Capitol Hill. And you know that. You've heard about that. But I thought what was interesting in their front page story is that Senator Christopher J. Dodd, Democrat from Connecticut, said yesterday, I don't want to raise expectations that is going to be easy, this bailout loan, given the climate in the country. And he said that's a tall order. And in a sign of the growing pessimism among the Democratic leadership, that is pessimism not towards the proposal from Detroit automakers, the big three so-called, but pessimism that the Congress, which still includes a lot of lame duck Republicans who have been voted out of office but are still there at this point until January the 20th, they think it's going to be difficult to get anything passed. So Dodd, who I mentioned before, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Representative Barney Frank, Chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, and the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, wrote to President Bush, our president, our sitting lame duck president, after Thursday's hearing, that is after yesterday's hearing, urging him to rescue the industry. Dodd himself supports a taxpayer rescue, but called on the Bush administration or the Federal Reserve to save the automakers because Congress may not do so. Dodd said that he would persist, and you know, GM and Chrysler said if they don't get money this month, before the end of this month, December 2008, they're going to go bankrupt. They're going to be out of money, out of cash, and they may need to file for bankruptcy, which they feel would be such a bad loss of confidence for anyone considering buying a car, and not too many people have the money to buy a car right now. And of course, credit and leasing is a little more difficult for people who may not already have good credit or trying to get a car for the first time. So, obviously sales are way, way down for cars, but also if either GM or Chrysler or both have to file bankruptcy, they feel it would be such a negative stigma that people aren't going to buy their products because of warranty issues and so on. Is that company going to be there to take care of warranty issues if you're buying a new car? And of course, the answer is yes, they will. That'll be worked out somewhere. Even in bankruptcy, you'll have your warranty protected. So if you buy a good car now, don't worry about the warranty, folks. That's my statement. But nonetheless, they think that bankruptcy would hurt their image so much that they couldn't survive. Just to conclude this front page story from the New York Times this morning, talking about yesterday and what's happened this morning. Or let me just say, let me just use my own opinion. Remember, the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not necessarily faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anyone else, but Board of Trustee members. But we maybe, by accident, might happen. In any event, my opinion is President Bush is not going to do a darn thing. I mean, he's busy ending a whole bunch of regulations that that certainly President Obama, starting on January 20th, is going to turn right around and get rid of. But he's doing all kinds of anti-environmental things and all kinds of pardons of people that were crooks in terms of you know, administrative actions in the last couple of years. He may wind up with more pardons for his crony friends than even President Clinton did, who was the leader in pardons at the last minute for people who are your buddies and big campaign contributors. This is supposed to be for, you know, pardons, I thought, for systematic or system injustices, systemic injustices, things that, yeah, it broke the law, but really, you were a good person, ethically, you were a good person, and it's just a last-minute payoff to your cronies and your buddies and your campaign contributors. That's a real big black mark on President Clinton's record, by the way, at the end of his two terms, but it looks like George W. Bush may do worse. So I think the president is so busy paying off his friends and cutting regulations in one fell swoop that might benefit big business but will not help the rest of us in any way, that I doubt he's going to do that. I mean, if Congress doesn't pass these, I don't think he's going to do anything. But nonetheless, the Democratic leaders of Congress have appealed to him to do it because they don't think Congress with the lame duck Republicans are going to do it. But if the president's a lame duck Republican, and he is, he's not going to do anything either. So we can't count on him since he and the Republicans are mostly responsible for the messes, plural, that we've gotten into. That's my opinion, and you may not feel that way, of course, but I don't. Do any of you out there expect President Bush is going to take action if to save our automakers?
I don't.
Okay, well, there you go.
Definitely not.
No, it's the first I even heard of that proposal, which is why I mentioned it. I hadn't even heard that people might turn to our president to save the auto industry. I'd never heard that before, but it has happened now officially. And, of course, I'm sure even if the president does do something, he's going to wait to see what Congress does first.
I think Bush is preoccupied with buying a new $2 billion house in Texas.
Okay, well, there's... There's all those other issues. Now, in the editorial of the New York Times, again from this morning, it says reality check for Detroit. And, of course, they think there should be a bailout of loans. But Congress, they say, should ask for more. They say there are solid grounds to mistrust Detroit's big three. As the price of gasoline, they say, drifts back below $2 a gallon, the big three face a powerful incentive to just slip on the drive for better mileage and new fuels and fall back on the gas guzzlers they know and already have in stock and already are building, because it might be easy short-term profit. Long-term, it will not help them. Long-term, it will, you know, how can they even be competitive? At the Detroit Auto Show this January, what's going to be introduced are brand new Toyota Priuses and brand new Honda Insights. And, you know, all of the Japanese industry is ready to go with new energy efficient, low price. The new Honda Insight is going to be the least expensive of all hybrids, probably about $15,000 or $16,000, in fact. Five-seater, five-passenger. So where are Detroit products? Oh, they might show some concepts from 2 or 3 or 4 years away, like 2012. GM says they might do something other than the Volt, which might be 2010. Ford has just announced that they're going to have a range of additional hybrids and all-electric cars starting in 2012. But Honda and Toyota have got them now, and they're introducing new models now.
Well, they're late. They're late to the party.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're. How can you recoup market share when other companies have 2 to 4 years ahead of you, have good products on the market?
Right. So, I mean, GM is promising to cut back on several of their brands and lay off more people. And Ford is the only one of the three, and thank goodness Ford is in this area, that says they can survive without a government loan. But $9 billion would still help them, they say. It'd still be a help. That's what I feel, too. I don't need the money, but I wouldn't mind having $9 billion, would you? Okay. Because it'll just cover you, for the next couple of months of Christmas shopping or whatever. But,
right.
And it's interesting to me, and I'm checking stock prices just to see if that's an indicator of who's afraid to buy what. And Ford's stock has not grown tremendously, but they've held steady over the last 2 weeks. And or risen like 10 cents here and there. Their shares are still ridiculously cheap at about $2.80 or $2.90 a share, but because they dropped so much because of the last couple of years. But and of course, Chrysler doesn't have any stocks because they're a private equity company. They went private, although they're still not in good shape from what they've said. And GM stock is down $1 a share or something. And all of the investment people say don't invest in any of these people. Maybe if there's a buyout, maybe some value might go up. Remember, the other things that we've been talking about in the show, other alternative ideas, is that Ralph Nader, several months ago, when he was in town here in Dearborn, said, get some big business people to buy GM, fire the executives, which is also mentioned in the New York Times editorial today. Fire all the top executives. That don't keep them on just because they're willing to work for a dollar each. They've already got, hundreds of millions from their positions that they're each year. So they shouldn't be worried about, their retirement. Retire them just to show people that that's not what the government expects, is to have the leadership that made bad decisions for many years, in some case more than 10 years, to stay there.
I understand you could purchase GM for $3 billion.
Yes, that's the going rate, that you could buy all the shares and therefore control GM and its future direction for $3 billion. And I know it would be socialism, but why wouldn't the government do that rather than to give them $12 billion? Why don't they just buy them? And then they talk about, getting their company back on track. If the government owns them, and if the government is smart, now how much can we trust a government to be smart about anything? But, and that's what some conservatives would say, not necessarily me.
But they need to put smart managers at the helm and let somebody run it in a better direction. Mulally he came with the idea of changing course, and that hasn't happened.
Bring Leah Coca out of retirement.
Yeah.
He's probably too old and doesn't want to go through that hassle. But if you got to appoint someone else, even a GM, Bob Lutz, a car guy that understands cars, and he's been fighting Wagner and the rest of GM for the last 5-6 years. He's the one that's introduced the new cars, the new exciting cars, the new hybrid cars. It's been Bob Lutz, who formerly was first with Ford and then with Chrysler, and got out when Daimler Chrysler took over Chrysler. But we have some auto executives that understand the business, that if they were given the power through a government buyout, for example, or government oversight committee, as they're calling them, if there's not a government buyout. But why not just buy the company?
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's so cheap.
It'd be a better deal.
It's true. You got the debts. You've got to go along with that.
Take it in a new direction.
Then you don't have to worry about negotiating and mediating and trying to cajole GM's executives to do the right thing. You can just make them do the right thing for the future of this company and this country, as well as the company. It's worth a try. I don't know about Chrysler. Ford doesn't need that help. But what's wrong with one nationalized car company? And it's got to be the big one. It's got to be GM, because they're in the worst trouble now. But let's keep them going. And it won't hurt Ford's supply. Even Ford and Chrysler say, if GM goes down, it's all our suppliers and our credit, it's going to kill us too. So I think it's smarter, rather than this stupid idea of a congressional oversight committee, just buy them.
Well, the government is first. Not in the business to run a car company. They have more pressing matters on hand.
But if they own the company, they can put people in or take people out that aren't doing the job, and they can set the agenda, which is fuel economy and energy efficiency that we need to compete with Honda and Toyota. And we know we've got to have our car companies there in the next 5 to 10 years.
We need some good mass transit. That's all we've heard is talk.
Get them into light rail.
We need mass transit. You know. We need to go with the energies of the future. And we need to hurry up and do these things.
I even made, and it wasn't a facetious comment, all everybody took it that way 10 years ago, Ford should get into manufacturing bicycles. I know. It's great. But all means of mass transit. Transportation, they got out of light rail when they had the stupid idea to put the rail buggies here in Detroit, like at Fairlane Town Center when it first opened in the early 80s, on rubber tires, which when the tracks got iced over and full of snow here in Michigan, they couldn't move. They couldn't go. Now, who was the stupid Ford exec that came up with light rail that runs on rubber tires and install a demo model right here in Dearborn, Michigan, where every winter they try to go out, they send people out to shovel the thing, put down ice, the little cars wouldn't move. Of course they won't. Of course. Who? And just like GM killing the electric car project that they had so far ahead 10 years ago for no good reason. No good reason except, ooh, it might embarrass or lower sales of your other gas-guzzling cars. It might embarrass the oil industry, and it might lower your own sales. So, we shouldn't do that. They would have been the number one electric car company in the world today if they just would have. And they said, well, nobody wanted to buy it. I wanted to buy it. Everybody that had one in California wanted to buy their car before they took back the lease car. Don't tell me nobody would have bought them. That was a foolish hedge because you didn't want your company to get into new waters, new unexperienced waters. Oh, my God. Head in the sands, conservative, short-term, profit-greedy executives. And if the government buys it, maybe we can actually make it. It's worth a try once with one company. I wouldn't buy out all three of them, but it seems the cheaper way to go, and then you don't have to dicker and negotiate with oversight committees. You've got your committee, and you can make things happen.
So you're saying buy GM, but what about the bailout for the other two?
Ford has said they don't need it.
And what
but
about
if GM
Chrysler?
Goes down, they say they're going to go under,
But what
too.
About Chrysler? Chrysler needs a bailout. You're going to...
I let Chrysler maybe give them the bailout and let them look for, as they say they're doing, somebody else to buy them, you know, even if it's a foreign car manufacturer. I mean, Jeep is still a great brand. They can sell that. Supposedly, that's all that Daimler really wanted when they bought Chrysler. They only wanted Jeep, but they had to go with everything, and... I don't know. They didn't make the right decisions, and they weren't able to. So they sold it. But as Nardelli, the head of Chrysler, Cerberus Chrysler, has said, they're going to be building. They had all these deals with Nissan and other companies to build their cars for them. So they're like their light trucks of Nissan, which who needs more trucks in the U.S. But so Chrysler, I think if they're given a loan, a small one, that they can hang in there, and they might sell themselves to a foreign car manufacturer, but at least the jobs will be preserved. And so maybe I'm not the greatest expert, but I'm just saying, because you asked, I don't think Ford needs that help. But as Ford said, if GM goes down, and even if Chrysler goes down, they can't survive either. Because of the suppliers and the dealer networks and so on. And so I may give a token bit of help to Ford, of course. They've got some good cars on the way. They've had a better plan for the future than GM or Chrysler.
I think it's highly embarrassing to see the CEOs of the big three testifying before Congress and saying, we get it now. We now understand what consumers want.
Yeah.
It's kind of late in the game. But I do have an article here.
Go ahead, briefly. Let's finish
this
up
with
that.
This is from Pat Buchanan, and it's called Who Killed Detroit?
And if our listeners don't know, Pat Buchanan is a conservative. He actually ran for president several times, sort of an independent maverick type. He was even on the Ross Perot party ticket in one previous presidential election.
Yes.
And he is the conservative commentator on MSNBC these days. Go ahead.
And I'm just going to paraphrase. He wrote quite an extensive article for MSNBC.MSN.com on the internet. Mm-hmm. And he says, who killed the U.S. auto industry? He says, what killed Detroit was Washington, the government of the United States, the politicians, the journalists, and the muckrakers who have long harbored a deep animus, that means hatred, against the manufacturing class that ran the smokestack industries that won World War II. So, in other words, he's saying there's a lot of prejudice against labor unions and blue-collar workers, and I couldn't agree more. He says, how did big government do in the U.S. auto industry? Washington imposed a minimum wage. They instituted the healthiest and safest work sites in the world. They created OSHA. They created diversity in the labor force. Environmental laws came next. Pollution-free factories were very healthy for workers. And then Washington created fuel efficiency standards on the entire U.S. car fleet. Washington imposed a corporate tax rate of 35%, raking off another 15% in Social Security payroll taxes. State governments imposed income and sales taxes, and governments imposed property taxes to subsidize services and schools. And the union, the United Auto Workers, struck repeatedly to win the highest wages and most generous benefits on earth: vacations, holidays, work breaks, health care, pensions for workers and their families and retirees. U.S. plants became the cleanest and safest on earth, and we had the highest paid wage earners. And that was the American dream. That was what we all wanted for America. However, outside the United States, there was no equality of standards or taxes. In the global economy, GM and Ford had to compete with cars made overseas, made in factories from Japan, Germany, and Korea, who had no health and safety standards, lower wages, and no taxes. Taxes were forgiven on U.S. exports. Japan, Germany, and Korea were export-driven economies. And they do not believe in free trade as we understand it. They are our trading partners. But their ideas of free trade are much different than our ideas. They understand that manufacturing is the key to national power. They manipulate their own currencies. They grant tax rebates to our exporters and thrive on our technology to win, and thieve and steal our technology to win. And that is Asia's idea of free trade. And this global economy has not profited or prospered America. In the 1950s, we made all our own toys, clothes, shoes, bikes, furniture, motorcycles, cars, cameras, telephones, TVs, etc. You name it, we made it. We no longer build commercial ships in the United States. We have one airplane company, and it outsources. China produces our computers. And if GM goes Chapter 11, America will soon be out of the auto business. Our politicians and pundits may not understand what is going on, but historians will have no problem explaining the decline and fall of America.
Okay. That's scary. No, and that was Pat Buchanan, who is a well-known independent maverick-type conservative, and he makes some good points.
He's blaming it on free trade.
Right, yeah, and not so much on the auto industry or the auto unions, which is that's completely unfair to blame them, because even GM tried to do a sort of a different kind of union contract in which the auto workers would have more input, even if lower wages, in the Saturn experiment. And, of course, that Spring Hill, Tennessee plant that had that new contract, well, first of all, the Saturn people lost their different contract. They get the same contract as all the GM people, and they closed that plant, too. So Saturn was off to a good start, but for a number of reasons, it failed, and now it has some pretty good cars, which like the Aura, which is from the Opel division of Europe, which is a very good sedan, and the sports car they do, the Saturn View, is pretty good. That's also based on a European design, because GM, just like Ford, has some pretty good cars, but they're not made in America. But if they can get them here and start making them here, they might be better off in a competitive way. So Saturn is way behind. I know they're one of the brands that may be killed, in fact, by GM. Just because of Saturn. What I'm saying is they've worked with the auto. Certainly we know here, but a lot of the of Congress, they don't know that the contracts at these major auto companies have changed a lot in the last couple of years. There's all kinds of giveaways that have already happened, and in order to help the companies survive. So the auto workers shouldn't be blamed. The auto workers union should not be blamed for the situation the way they are. Receiving that blame. But conservatives, anti-union people will always blame unions. It's convenient.
Free trade has not done the United States a favor. We're importing a lot of manufactured goods from all over the world.
Not if these other countries have tariffs, that is taxes, against our imports.
And we should have tariffs against their imports into United
States.
Well,
it's not a good idea to do that, but as long as they have theirs in place, then we shouldn't have ours down. That's just wrong, conceptually at least.
We're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interconnected things. I do think that President-elect Obama is beginning to get a great team of smart people together. Whether or not you like the idea that he's incorporating some of his so-called enemies, both Republicans and Hillary Clinton and others, they're still very smart people and experienced people, and I'm very excited to see what his team comes up with. Yesterday I heard that somebody made the proposal, why not go with single-payer health care? And they say, well, why do that? He didn't even campaign on that basis. He wanted health care improvements. But if you just go ahead and do it, very complicated, very upsetting, a lot of changes, okay, would come about. That's money better spent, you know, if you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, better spent in the long run, because guess what then? The auto industry and other companies, they don't have to pay for it anymore.
And that's what other countries do.
You know, right.
They pay for their own health care.
And it will make the system less expensive. Maybe not quite as good in some ways. I know there's problems with the Canadian single-payer health care, problems with the British version, problems with the German version. But still, the cost for the whole country would be so much lower, including for the auto industry and those employers, that would be money very, very well spent to make that transition, even though, talk about change, whoa, that's going to be so big. But isn't that better than just giving, you know, no strings attached, $150 billion to AIG, for example, which were the first to go to the trough, and even Citibank over the weekend, the silent negotiations of another $50 or $60 billion to keep them afloat. And then I get a call yesterday that my Citibank card has been used by unauthorized people, and I've got to wait for a new card. But
They work in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. I guess. Well, we have to move on to some other local stories that we're going to present to you folks, and we're going to do that after these couple of nonprofit announcements. So just take a listen to that. We'll be back with more important Making Waves issues here on the new WHFR Journal.
If you're thinking about going back to school or continuing your education, you should thank Henry Ford Community College. Since 1938, HFCC has provided excellence and innovation in education and services to their students and their community. Over the decades, thousands of students have gone on to become leaders in their fields, and now it's your turn. The winter semester begins Monday, January 12th, and registration is already taking place. Remember, Henry Ford Community College offers a job skills guarantee, a credit transfer guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee that guarantees that your tuition rates will be frozen if you graduate from HFCC within 4 years. Classes are filling up fast, so call 1-800-585-HFCC today or visit us online at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
Hi, I'm Anderson Coleman, host with Blues with the Feeling on Saturdays, WHFR.FM. I'm here to say happy holidays and Merry Christmas. Drive safely.
Hello, this is Mrs. Robinson from the One Plus One show, wishing you a happy Christmas and a Merry New Year, and be safe this holiday season.
More of the new WHFR Journal for December the 5th, 2008, continues. My name is Jay Koronek, and Susan Morrell is with me, our WHFR news director. Also want to let you know, remind you that the play Wisdom and Wonder is continuing last weekend here at Henry Ford Community College. And it's 7 p.m. tonight and 2 and 7 tomorrow, Saturday, and 2 p.m. only on Sunday. A great family affair at the Adre Auditorium on the main campus of Henry Ford Community College, 5101 Evergreen Road. I'm sure there'll be tickets enough for everyone at the door, and it's really great. It's a bunch of stories and tales about Greek traditions, and remember, they started that big one, even though it was rather incomplete. It's called Democracy. Okay, long, long time ago. And, of course, it was only the rich men who were able to participate in this fun thing called democracy, but it caught on, didn't it? Okay. So, I was going to do one story quickly here. Yes, it's a little ways back. It's from the Press and Guide on Sunday, November 30th. I don't think I mentioned it on this show. Maybe you didn't hear about it, too. Is in the race in the November election for a seat as a judge in Dearborn's 19th District Court. Says here in the story it was too close to call. No, it was called by the votes. Mark Summers, the incumbent judge, had won it by 228 votes. All you need, folks, is one vote. But, of course, it is the right, I think if you pay some money, to ask for a recount. And we did see on that date that Candace Ewing Abbott asked for a recount. She did not have any great reasons. She says, after evaluating the election data by precinct and speaking with those who have expertise on these matters, I requested a recount based upon statistical aberrations in some of the results. But she says, well, I'm not counting on a change in the outcome. So I guess those statistical aberrations based on other smart people's thoughts, I think they're just a continued harassment of Chief Summers. But we do always want to state here, we want to make sure every election is won in terms of the votes counted should be the real votes. It's in some ways embarrassing, but God bless democracy and the fact that we have a backup system so we get a chance to vote something, to count something again in Minnesota for the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race, the Republican and the Democrat, Democrat being Al Franken, the comedian and Air America host for the first couple of years of Air America Radio. Still don't know the winner there. Still don't know. According to Susan Morrell, just said, really? Her microphone wasn't on.
How come they can't get the count in?
Well, they're doing it very slowly, but carefully. And according to Frank, and there's some absentee ballots. There's a whole bunch of little weird issues. Of course, the Republican is still saying, well, I'm ahead. Yeah, but if you look at all these little special things that they're still going over and that they've semi-tabulated, it looks like Al Franken yesterday was ahead by 22 votes. 22 votes in the whole state.
Wow.
But it's going to go on for another week or so. And of course, there might still be more challenges to the way they count and so on. That it'll go through the courts. So although from what I know about this race and the so-called charges against Mark Summers and so on, remember Summers was actually endorsed by the Democrats in town and the Republicans and by independent law organizations in the area and by at least the Press and Guide. I think the Times Herald didn't take favors, or maybe it was vice versa, but one paper said, well, they're both kind of good, I guess, and we don't know. Well, if a paper doesn't know from all their reporters and all their research who the better candidate is, that's pretty pathetic. But one of the papers didn't take a stand, and I always hate that when it happens, and I'm not saying which one it is because I don't remember right now. But the other paper clearly endorsed Summers, so and Summers won by 228, and I don't think, you know, I just think it's additional harassment, and that my personal feeling is they wanted to harass him in the first place because certain people were friends of people that Mark Summers have has pushed out of jobs and so on. And we don't know the outcome yet of those discrimination suits anyway, those that were filed against Summers. But just because somebody files a suit doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean they will be found that the court will find in their favor. So we still don't know, but, you know, what the heck. A part of those discrimination suits have already been thrown out as having no basis. That was before the election even happened. So just want to let you know that Abbott has filed for a recount, and I'm all in favor of the recount, as long as it's sensible. I mean, one time here, okay. And I think that a recount will actually cost her some money. I don't think it's done for free in this case. But we'll see how that turns out. Okay, and I can't remember, I'm sorry to say, but I should check my own podcast at WHFR.FM to see what I said several weeks ago. But we had some special programming on for Thanksgiving and may not have said this sad story about another West Dearborn business closing. And Susan, why don't you summarize the story for our listeners about Little Cafe?
Yes, there's an article in the Dearborn Press and Guide for Sunday, November 23rd, and it's right on the front page, and the headlines say, Little Cafe is set to close its doors, and that's a West Dearborn restaurant, no date announced yet. It's located at 22180 Michigan Avenue. And the owner of the restaurant is Pat Stagg. And I guess paid parking and the economy are both issues. And here's some of the later comments in the article. The implementation of paid parking has hurt the Little Cafe and other West Dearborn businesses. And Jay and I talked about that many times here on the new WHFR Journal. And we weren't totally in favor of paid parking when it was announced that it was coming in. And
I have to cut in and just say that I saw the cable television presentation of the last Dearborn City Council meeting. And it did have the head of the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, Jennifer Gehring, I believe is her name, and I'd like to have her on a show here, in fact, to talk about this. But they were saying times are tough and that West Dearborn businesses, she felt, representing businesses in Dearborn, I think more than 60 or more than 100 businesses are part of the Dearborn Chamber. And she said paid parking isn't working, and they felt it should be ended. And, of course, some of the council members, of course, Doug Thomas said, I told you. And of course, it was on the ballot. And then the people of Dearborn, because of either Mayor Guido or Mayor O'Reilly at the time, said, we need to go with that. It's a good plan. It's the right thing to do. Of course, times have changed. The economy has changed. We have the luxury of hindsight, you know, looking back. It may or may not have been the right thing to do at that time. Right now, it was the wrong thing to do. It's the wrong thing to have. But several of the other council members that voted for it, and Doug Thomas didn't have to apologize because he didn't vote for it, they said to Jennifer Gehring, they confronted her and said, yeah, but remember it was the businesses of West Dearborn that said they didn't want to pay their own special assessment for the parking lots. Somebody has to pay for parking lot maintenance at least, if not the construction of the towers there that are apparently not really needed anymore anyway, the parking towers. But, you know, I think they were saying, okay, we can get rid of paid parking, but we got these lots. Somebody's got to pay to maintain them. Your businesses in West Dearborn that you represent are going to have to understand that they're going to have to take up the cost. to pay for the maintenance, you know, clearing snow out in winter and so on. Somebody's got to pay for that. And it's not the responsibility of the city to do that exclusively, totally. Taxpayers probably should pay a portion, but then they have these special assessment districts, when the acronym is unfortunate, SAD, which the businesses are sad about, because it means that they have to pay their fair share of the maintenance of the lots. Right now, it's just coming from user-paid parking, but guess what? The city is losing money like crazy because there aren't enough users to use the paid parking.
And that's what Doug Thomas predicted that.
He said, we're not going to be able to afford it.
Right here on the new WHFR Journal.
Yeah, right. He came here and said that, and that was when business was even better. I mean, yeah. The economy was better. And, of course, Little Professor moved out almost right away, supposedly because of paid parking coming in, and they thought they saw the writing on the wall about that. And but now the businesses of West Dearborn are asking to eliminate paid parking, as is little cafe there.
Yeah.
That they thought that was the crux. But, of course, then they'll have to come up with money to pay for the special assessments to keep the lots good and clear and so on. So it's not fun. We're sorry to have to report these closings. In fact, I had a list of places for, I was going to take a group of people here at the station out to dinner that I was going to pay for, or Susan McGraw, and we're going down a list of restaurants in the local area that we could go to. And we didn't realize until we thought about it after we made the list, a third of them have already closed. So, you know.
Where is Doug Thomas, Jay? Is he still around?
Yeah. He was at the meeting. Well, he still lives in Dearborn. We know he has a place in Florida, and he said as soon as Mayor Guido didn't need a nemesis anymore, and of course he passed away, unfortunately, that he was going to just up and leave Dearborn. And
We should have him back to the show before he goes.
Yeah, final parting words. Those will be choice, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. He's really entertaining.
Yeah.
He knows what's happening in the marketplace.
Well, I enjoy the guy. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but he is an independent thinker, and he is smart, and he knows a lot, and we need people who are independent thinkers, but also have a lot of experience and they're smart. You know, it's a great combination, and I totally respect him for having all those characteristics, even if I don't agree many times, although I was actually against that paid parking idea myself. People at Dearborn spoke too, and maybe that was the wrong thing to do. Now we see it was wrong to do.
We used to love Little Professor. That was a great bookshop. Great.
We need more magazines, more independent thinking, more ideas. Not the pop magazines. We need the wide range of intelligent people speaking at length in printed statements. And Little Professor was a great place. In lieu of that, folks, go to your local public library. Find out when they're open. They subscribe to most of those periodicals. You can go there and read it for free. It's true. You can't take, I don't think, anymore, I don't think they've changed the policy to make it possible to take the magazines home. They've got to stay there in the library. But it's worth a half an hour to an hour a week to take yourself and your family to the public library that's closest to you. That's a way. If you say, I can't afford to buy a magazine or a newspaper, public libraries have them for free. Let me go and update here with the paper in front of me. The mail people want a delivery, so I'm letting them in. Okay. Let me go to something. I thought I mentioned this, but maybe I didn't. I attended 2 weeks ago last Tuesday, and if I didn't mention it, I'll mention it again because it's a great idea, that plans have been revealed now for an intermodal train station, rail passenger station. What the plan was, and it was 2 weeks ago Tuesday that they made the presentation, and Mayor O'Reilly talked, and the consultants talked about it too, that after 7 years of getting this proposal together, they believe that we should have a new train station in Dearborn. We're going to have to pay for part of it or figure out how to raise the money, but they're going to move the current station location closer to West Dearborn business area, into what is now a sort of an open parking lot for Ford Motor Company and or that Lincoln Mercury dealer there on the east end of West Dearborn on Michigan Avenue. And that is an open property. It is available either to purchase relatively cheaply or lease or something. And the train station would right now only has one track. So only one train at a time can stop there or go by there. And they're proposing in the biggest configuration, three tracks, one a high-speed rail that would go to Chicago, get this, in 2 hours.
I want to go.
Yeah. Cheaper than a train, than a plane, and it gets you into downtown Chicago, into the beautiful Union train station there. I assume the high-speed rail would go to the Union station there. Whoops, I'm going to cough again. Hang on. Turn off the mic. I have to remember to turn it back on, though. Okay. Well, it's a great plan. Commuter service to Ann Arbor is going to start in 2010. And, of course, someone tentatively from the audience of business people who were there at this meeting at the center, Dearborn Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, said, well, what is it going to cost? And very tentatively, the consultant said, about $32 million if we go all the way, do the whole big deal, which is a wonderful idea. All this transportation, all the linking of light rail and taxis and rental cars and another hotel in West Dearborn and an entrance way to Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, the Henry Ford, right there, big time. What a wonderful spur to business. And it's just 2 to 5 years away if we can come up with the money, and we need to do that. Well, they said $32 million, and somebody said, because it was right after the bailout of AIG, $32 million. Is that all? Oh, what the heck? That shouldn't be a problem. $32 million? You know, we're talking about billions for all these people, hundreds of billions nationally, and yeah, I think the city, Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, businesses in West Dearborn, the city of Dearborn itself, we can raise that. It, you know, the center where they're talking, that costs $40 million. And we did that in a better economy. And it's true that Ford Motor Company, thank you very much, because they got their name on the place. They contributed a fourth, 25%, $10 million Ford gave us for the center. And we thank them very much, even though they wouldn't allow us to put the name Dearborn in there. And they needed their own name in there. But other than that, $32 million with all the, we would become a true transportation hub for all of southeastern Michigan if that is done. It needs to be done so quickly. And of course, Mayor O'Reilly is looking for help and support, and he's got good connections with all these different folks. And absolutely, I'll give him $5. What the heck? out of my own personal retired person's pocket. That's what I'll
We definitely need mass transit here in the United States. I mean, Europe is light years away ahead of the United States.
It's a little bit touchy, but we have a follow-up story that I'll let Susan do here briefly. Judge Wiganek got into trouble over dinner several months back, in which he talked about the former owner of La Chiche, his name Shaheen, I believe, who left the country with a lot of money, left his wife to go to jail for him for tax evasion and so on. And he was suspected of using some of his money to help support certain freedom fighters in the Middle East, as they call themselves. And so... Judge Wiganek, at this meal, who's talking about all kinds of things, happened to be overheard to say about Shaheen, the owner, if I have his name correct, the owner of La Chiche, that that he was a terrorist, certainly a supporter of terrorists. And I don't think that's totally been proven, but even if it was, he then went on to talk about Arab people in general and cast aspersions. And he's been, and of course, the local Arab American anti-discrimination groups have been talking to him. They want a complete apology, complete retraction. And guess what? He's issued a statement, and it's not complete. Do you have some follow-up for the down on the story? Sorry, Susan, I just gave the background. I jumped in here. He made the statement now, but it's not everything they want.
Well, he has issued a statement, 19th District Court Judge Richard, how do you pronounce it?
Wiganek.
Wiganek. said he is done. He is done with trying to reach a compromise with leaders in the Arab American community as it relates to alleged derogatory remarks he made about the community this past summer. But leaders of the Arab American community say Wiganek has failed to adhere to one request, which has caused some tension between the two sides. Wiganek has met with the Council of Arab American Organization representatives on four occasions. After discussing the scandals in Detroit involving Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, Barry said, Wiganek moved on to Dearborn politics, the judicial race, political corruption, and the former Lashish proprietor, Talil Shaheen. And this is what Barry says. Barry says that Wiganek defined Shaheen as a crook and an Arab terrorist.
Yeah, it was that Arab terrorist charge that went too far. He was a crook. He was found guilty, but they can't either charge him or certainly prosecute him since he left the country. And I don't know if they can extradite him or not from where he is, if they know where he is. But they have, for the tax evasion charges, since his wife was part of the company, they've put her in jail in lieu of that. What a great husband, right? He's escaped and left his wife to go to jail for him.
Yeah, that's... total gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, here's what Barry says. Barry says Wiganek also went on to malign Arab Americans in general.
Yes, that's the problem.
And Barry says he's deeply offended, and he is deeply concerned about the preconceived notion that Wiganek has of Arab people standing before him and the decision he will render based upon their ethnic being. I mean, that is a good point. I mean, right. I can see his point.
As just a follow-up, I think that's all we can say about that now. But today in Dearborn, it was reported on WDET this morning that they had a media analysis of pop culture. Things like, you know, the movies and what are the topics and, you know, do they talk about Arab Americans very much or Middle Easterners very much? And of course they do. It's a pop subject. I mean, not just the war in Iraq and so on. Well, how does pop culture do in being fair to Arabs and Middle Eastern populations in general? Worse today than 3 years ago. That was the conclusion of the study. And those stereotypes, and we probably recognize in the movies they exaggerate for the sake of making a good story or a lot of action or something, but those stereotypes are still out there and can influence people's thinkings. Whether or not they influence Judge Wiganek's in his personal opinions that he has expressed, but you got to be careful as a judge to be always fair, not only in the courtroom, but also outside the courtroom. And it looks like he had a little slip there, but it does raise a question about fairness to Arab Americans coming into his courtroom. You know, it's just something, at least if it's in public, he's certainly aware that other people are aware, and that pressure on him to be fair and to look at his own opinions and then go past them, it's good that it be expressed, you know, folks, and maybe it doesn't need any legal action or removing him from the bench or anything, but it's good to express that, those concerns of other people, because if fairness is his goal as a judge, it should be anyway, then this will just help to keep him on track if he does have personal feelings that are not so fair.
Here's one more comment from the newspaper article, and this is from Wiganek's attorney, and he says that Wiganek is not going to apologize for what he said about Talil Shaheen because Shaheen is a criminal, and the judge shouldn't have to apologize for that. That's a little deep.
Right. If the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Group is asking for an apology about Shaheen, you know, there may be a shred of legality that he hasn't been totally charged or prosecuted or found guilty because he's not in this country. But his wife went to jail and was found guilty for similar charges in regard to how they were doing their taxes for their business. And the Arab terrorist thing, as I said, has not been proven, I do not think, although there's circumstantial evidence that he did contribute to quote-unquote freedom fighter groups of one sort or another in the Middle East, but that hasn't come into a court of law to be adjudicated, and therefore it's not clearly proven. So, of course, you can't libel somebody who's not even here, you know. I'm just reporting that it's gone on for 4 months now, back and forth, and I think he's done with it. He's apologized to Arab Americans in general, but he's not going to apologize for what he said, which might have been a slight exaggeration about Mr. Shaheen, who's not even here. Now, I wanted to go on. I know we only have a couple minutes to go, but I wanted to go on and talk about John Dingell.
And I'm running out to lunch.
Okay.
So I'll say goodbye for now.
Okay, goodbye for now. They close our cafeteria here, folks, on 2 o'clock on Friday. So bon appetit, Susan Morrell, WHR News Director.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for sitting in. You know, a lot of people were saying, and there's an editorial opinion press and guide from Sunday, November 30th also, oh, Dingell ouster is a blow to the state and it makes us look bad, and how dare they treat good old John Dingell so inappropriately. Again, we talked here on this show and expressed the reason that they wanted to move along a lot of Barack Obama's agenda, some of which, in terms of the auto industry, like raising the miles per gallon things, John Dingell has been an obstruction. Okay? If they would have forced the auto industry to get the gas economy that Japan has now for their cars, then we wouldn't be so badly off, would we? You know, but he was against that, and maybe he trusted that the big three would do it themselves in their own time and way, and wouldn't lay people off. Of course, they still have, haven't they? But I don't know if you know this, but I read this as behind the scenes, is that the House Democrats made a deal to Dingell. They said, look, we will let you be committee chairperson here for another 2 years, because you said maybe you're going to retire in a couple years and your health is not that good anyway, after all. You might be forced to retire even sooner. Let's hope not, for John's sake. We all love him, and he has done many, many good things for so many years, and his dad before him in Congress. And okay. But they said, look, if you agree to retire from this committee chairmanship, not from your whole position, you know, retire from the House, but if you agree in 2 years, we will let you have the committee chairmanship for 2 more years. I mean, he does have the health issues. He does have the age issues. He wouldn't go for it. He wouldn't go for it. No, I'm not going to tell you if I'm going to. That's an insult. And I'm sure he saw it as a personal insult, if not a professional one, that they're sort of saying, either, you know, we'll give you 2 more years and then you turn it over to someone else, or we'll take it away from you now. And so he could have kept that committee chairmanship and whatever it would have meant to Michigan and whatever power, you know, would have been there for legislation in the next 2 years. He wouldn't do it. And I think you shouldn't feel so totally sorry for John, because they gave him an option and he wouldn't take any of it. Just so you know, that was behind the scenes. That hasn't come out in the main press, but it's been in national publications. It is true. I can't remember which one right now. Probably New York Times said that. Okay, and last but not least, because coming up in just 2 minutes and we got to go, is Highway 61. The best in blues, and mostly local blues. Joanne Korchinska heading up the blues cruise down Highway 61 starting at 2 o'clock today in just 2 minutes from now. I guess it last but not least, just because I wanted to get it in Dearborn Heights, your water bills are going up. The Dearborn Heights City Council recently approved the water department's new fiscal year 2008-09 budget. And that's amazing, the 08-09, because it's November 30th. I mean, aren't they supposed to do that on July 1st? Anyway, the rate has already become effective. Monday in December will increase the average bimonthly residential billing by $8.77, or 5.8% monthly, bimonthly, annually even. And it'll increase the minimum monthly residential bill by $1.30, or 4.9%. So that's certainly above inflation. You got to pay it. Costs are going up everywhere is the bottom line, and we have to conserve Nonetheless, I certainly personally wish you all good, smart planning for the holiday season. Hope you have a job and can keep it. Even Jon Stewart of The Daily Show last night made an impassioned and somewhat funny but true editorial about why the Detroit automakers need to be saved. His excuse was he had his first sexual experience in a Ford Mustang. So that's why he wants to have them saved. No, he said they're making stuff. Stuff we can use. What has the financial market done with all that money we've given them so far? Detroit should not be thought of in the same way. They make stuff we can use. They give jobs to people who really do exist. Good people, honest people. We need to support them. Let's hope, if not Congress, George W. Bush sees it that way, too. We know GM needs the money before the end of the year. So keep those thoughts in mind, and let's keep our fingers crossed. Happy holidays to all of you. I hope they can stay that way or get better. WHFR Dearborn, stay tuned for blues music with Joanne Korchinska. Take care out there.